Welcome back to Can We Talk About It with Child and Family Services. I am very fortunate to be here today with Renee from North Star, who oversees the Shannon Project. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to hear about the things that you're doing through the Shannon Project. You and I have known each other since I think I came over to Child and Family, and I think we instantly built a bond.
Right.
And work really good together. So I'm excited to hear about the things that you're doing.
Okay, so the Shannon program works with youth ages 10 through 24, and we are a violence prevention intervention program, as you said, part of North Star, a police department initiative. So basically, we are here to prevent kids from being arrested, detained, or getting expelled from school.
Yeah. So how does a child, well, not necessarily a youth and a young adult get involved with the Shannon Project?
So basically, it's really through referral process. We get a lot of referrals from the schools. We get a lot of referrals from other kids. So if it's their friend, they're like, hey, you should get hooked up with them. We do a lot of street outreach. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of referrals that way. We get referrals from Child and Family.
Yep.
We get referrals from DCF, just different organizations within the city. Even if it's a parent, a self-referral.
Yeah. And when you're doing the outreach piece of it, right? Because I think that's unique compared to everything else, right? Like you can get referrals from providers and police departments and schools, but the outreach piece I think might be different for people that don't know it. So what does that look like?
So the outreach piece is where I have 7 outreach caseworkers, case managers, which go into the community in different areas where there's youth gathered. It could be a group of youth. It doesn't matter where. A lot of people like to call it hotspots. Mm-hmm. I like to call it neighborhoods because that's really what it is for them.
Right.
It's their neighborhood. And they go out into the neighborhoods and they just build relationships with young people and try to help them make better decisions. Like if they're talking about something that's not so positive, try to steer them in that direction. And what you don't realize is that we moved recently.
Oh, okay.
We moved to 1213 Purchase Street, and we have created a room where our kids can go play games, talk, or just sit there and mm-hmm. try to get away from some of the elements that are out there. We have been able to impact in our community thousands.
Yeah,
thousands
I believe it. Yeah, having known you, the time frame that I've known you, I know the things that you do out there. And also being able to utilize like mobile crisis when mobile crisis is needed for some of the youth that you're handling. So I'm assuming that the folks that are doing like that case management, the outreach, right, are able to connect with them in a way that others might not.
Right. So I think because they've had the lived experience, a lot of our people have lived experience that they have done that, been there, done that, and they can actually help guide them. And a lot of these kids look at them as role models. Mm-hmm. So it's based on the individual, and every person that comes into our program is gets a case manager that is able to punch out their goals with them, try to see what they want to do, where they want to be, mm-hmm. and how they want to get there. And we help guide them through the whole process. So I came up with an acronym called EDGE, and it's to educate them on their consequences, to develop their mindset, guide them when needed, and empower them to make positive choices. So that's pretty much what we do with each individual youth. And when we're doing the street outreach, sometimes we run up across young people that are in crisis. Mm-hmm. And so it's been very instrumental to have, especially the community mobile crisis unit, because I can just make a phone call and say, hey, can you come here? Yeah. And we're over here at this location. And we don't have to get the kid to go buy into going
right
to crisis, because there's a stigma with mental health mm-hmm. With all of the population that we service.
Yeah, and it's all right because May is Mental Health Month, right? So it's right. Actually such a great time to talk about that, because I think sometimes not only is there a stigma, but I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that some of these kids probably wouldn't access services because of maybe not recognizing that they have a mental health issue or feeling maybe embarrassed that they're accessing services or and not realizing that it's protected information that's confidential and it's not something that we would disclose to folks that they're accessing the service. But being able to come to you versus you coming to us is such a big right. impact, right? Because we're meeting them where they're at
right.
and
it's
we're meeting them in their
thing.
Own community, in
right.
their own environment that possibly, you know, right. can, for one, you know, it's private as well as comfort.
Right. And some of it is trauma. A lot of it is trauma. A lot of it is racial trauma. And there's a difference between the two. But the one thing that they do both have in common is it affects your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not necessarily, and we tell the kids all the time, we're not saying you have any type of illness or diagnosis. What we're saying is you're going through a lot. You just experienced something traumatic,
yeah.
and we want to give you a safe place to talk about it. And so that's how we have to package it with our population, because as soon as you say you're going to go to a counselor, you're going to go to crisis, they're thinking like the extreme. Like,
exactly.
I don't have any illnesses. I don't take
Or they're thinking they're going to be put away like in an inpatient
right.
hospital.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's the last
well,
resort for
judged.
Us.
I mean, the biggest thing
yeah.
about our population is a lot of adults have let them down. A lot of adults have failed them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're afraid of building those relationships with adults, because then that's just another person that has said, you know what?
Yeah.
You know.
And the follow through, right? So if they're building a bond with somebody in your team and they know that that person will be there for them in the toughest of times, and knowing that they can trust that individual versus what they've experienced in the past where they might have been in a household that's not so supportive, or jump from one foster home to the next or group home, and never having that bond that they really needed, you know, and being able to access your services and be with somebody who could support them is
yeah.
incredible.
It's the consistency, and it's very important for the staff to be consistent. And if they're not, they get called out. So.
Yeah.
But it is very important that the staff is, and 99% of the time, we have staff that answer calls all night, all weekend, even though they're not getting paid.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they are on call for critical incidents. So we do more than just the individual work. So if there's a shooting or a stabbing or something that happens in the
mm-hmm.
community, we do go out and...
So tell me a little bit about how that works. So for, let's just, hopefully this doesn't happen, but say there's a shooting tonight. And like I said, hopefully it does not happen, but say there
yes,
is.
Would.
How would your team be notified to go out?
I would get a phone call and from the police department, but most of the time from the community.
Yeah.
I would get a call from the community before, a lot of times before the police
are notified.
So we get a call. We go out where there's a crowd. If there's a crowd at the hospital, we go out to try to like de-escalate and help with the traffic flow, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's better than having the police work with them, because when that happens, it just escalates things. And we don't want our kids getting arrested, because right now they're upset. Right now they're in trauma
yeah.
and they need people there to understand what they're going through. They don't need anyone there. You know, when they say, get
mm-hmm.
out of here, you know, it's offensive to them. So we try to move them out of the hospital area, because once that does happen and the crowd does form, they shut down the hospital. So it's not safe for anybody.
Right.
So we try to move them out of the area and help keep them at a distance so where they can calm down and there's no punitive actions taken.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, that makes so sense. So let me ask you, what led you to do a job like this?
I started doing this work when I lived in Texas. So I would say I've been doing this 34 years, I think.
Yeah, that's a long time.
I started working for a school. One of my sorority sisters, she was the principal of that school, and I was a parent like going in all the time. And she's like, you need to work and you need to get a job. So I ended up applying for a position there and started working. And I was the after school coordinator.
Yeah.
So I worked with an after school population at that time was all getting, their parents were all getting involved. The kids, it was a pre-K through third grade school.
Yep.
And so their parents were mostly getting involved. Where I lived was in a gang area. I lived in an area where there were gangs on almost on every corner, right? Gang members. And I felt safe because nobody was going to come into that neighborhood. But anyway, so I started doing the work with them. And then the city of Dallas asked me if I would continue doing that on a city level and doing it in the summer. So in the summer, I started on 94. I started doing that.
Oh, awesome.
Summer of 94, I started working with the city. So in about 1990, I started working with that population of the parents of the kids in that population. And then I went to the kids. So I found it rewarding because when you see the kids learn, when you see them grow, when you see them change right before your eyes, to me, that's probably the best part of the job. And I wasn't a street outreach worker and would show up at critical incidents and would go out there and talk to the kids and the young people. But it was important because I didn't know them. They didn't know me. But it was just building that relationship and building that trust. And then when I came back here, I started working with Upward Bound. And first generation low-income youth, they all have, a lot of them had issues. You still have to do violence prevention intervention there. And I started working at the Shannon program in 2015.
Wow, that's a long time. So, yeah. So I don't think this community realizes how fortunate they are to have you and have this program out there. So tell me how the program is funded.
So the program is funded through the Executive Office of Public Safety and Security, and it is part of the Charles E. Shannon Grant. And before, it used to be called HOPE, but then when they wanted to change the name in order to get it back up and running again, we were thinking of what's a good name, and I was like, well, it's a Shannon Grant, so New Bedford Shannon. So that's why how we ended up that way.
Yeah.
And that's why we called that, because it's named after Senator Charles E. Shannon.
Okay.
It is federal money that comes through the states. And right now, I know on a state level, we're looking to raise that amount of money that we get from, I think it's $11 million. We're trying to raise it to $14 million because there's such a need.
Right.
And that's not for the city of New Bedford, but that's for statewide.
Right, right. For it to be dispersed amongst all the projects, the Shannon projects that are out there.
15 other programs out there with 27 that are serving 27 cities. So it's a lot.
Yeah. We're all similar to the community of Ava Health Center, because I think we're 27. So it's interesting. So I'm wondering, like, I'd love to see the map to see, like, are they, you know, side by side and how do they support each other out in the community? Or is like our relationship unique compared to others, right? I'd be interesting to see that. Because I'm assuming that one of the biggest pieces of what you guys do, not just support these kids and navigate them through like the struggles that they're having, but ultimately the goal is to not have them gang related, to not have them associate with folks that are gang related, or at least if they're associating with them to understand, you know, the consequences that potentially could come out of it once in a while, right? Because I know this is going to sound like not, you know, maybe not well received, but at the end of the day, like, it's like somebody with addiction. If you're dealing with somebody that's gang involved, somebody with addiction, somebody with mental health, right? There's a piece of each one of those people, individuals, that is kindness and that is embracing and that's respectful and things like that. No one is born to say, I'm going to be in a gang today. I'm going to suffer from mental health. I'm going to suffer from substance abuse. So to be able to say to individuals that are involved in gangs, like, listen, we can sit and talk. Right. And let's talk about your experience in a gang and how do we try to get you out of it?
Right. And I think the important thing is, so the language that I try to use is every kid that is experiencing some difficulty, they're not necessarily part of anything official, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with gangs, like gangs. And I'm not saying that we don't have them here. We do have them. But that's their family.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like me saying, you know what, Pam, you can no longer belong to your family. So I never discourage them from being with their family. What I do discourage is the behaviors that they do when they're with them.
That makes so sense.
And so it's like taking, you can't take a kid away from their family. And sometimes it's the only people that they know, the only people that they trust, because that those are the people that are feeding them
mm-hmm.
and making sure they have a place to sleep at night. And I'm not saying that they don't all have parents, because a lot of them do have parents. And a lot of the kids are just so angry and so trauma ridden that it looks like it's gang activity. It looks like, and when I say gang activity, I say that loosely. It just looks like negative activity within a community
yep.
that is causing mayhem, right? So a lot of them are just troubled with whatever's happening in their life and don't know how to express it. Mm-hmm. So if you're hanging out at the corner, I'm going to go hang out with you because I need to have somebody in someplace safe.
Yep.
Where I can go.
So it's not necessarily that you want to be involved in some of the negative activity that happens versus being there to feel like as though you're being supported
right.
and learning how to associate with the group that can support you, but not necessarily take on right. these extracurricular activities that potentially could right. come out of this.
I mean, yeah. And if you look at the history of gangs, which 1954, we can go back further than that because the police department is considered something like that because a gang is just a group of people that have the same mission and goal in common, mm-hmm. right? You could say the police department's that. You could say the fire department's that. So there's all kinds of, you know, the teachers union, whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? But going back to when gangs started, they started to protect each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when the Lion King started in 1954, it was in Chicago, it was to protect their people from being robbed, from being beaten, from being mm-hmm. hungry, from being homeless. So a lot of, you know, I know this is going to sound crazy, but, you know, gangs are there. They form to create family that they didn't necessarily have. And I'm
that
not
doesn't
saying,
surprise me.
Right. So, you know, I'm not saying it's like a positive thing, but it's, A lot of them don't do negative things. A mm-hmm. lot of people that are considered part of that gang, that crew, are working, are paying taxes just like you and I, not participating in negative behaviors. But then there's young people. And one of the kids said to us, if I'm hungry, I'm going to rob you. I'm going to rob somebody. So they're not stealing just because they're bored. They're not doing the things they're doing because they have nothing else mm-hmm. to do. They're doing it because they want to feed their family, you know? And so a lot of times they're the caretaker of their siblings. And so this is
being able to disclose that to your team allows your team to work with them and come up with alternatives, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of robbing, let's see what else is out there. What can we do? What can we tap into to support you and get you the resources that you need?
And unfortunately, in New Bedford, there's not many resources mm-hmm. as far as there's no more youth housing. The employment, they don't pay enough to sustain have sustainable living because the rents are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough apartments in the area that are in good enough condition to live in, that are livable.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a community. So I think that's why we work so closely with the mobile crisis unit because that's a resource that we can count on. So there's a lot of resources out there that we've lost
mm-hmm.
because of funding. I'm not sure what the reason is, but there are a lot of resources out there that can help. So when people say, bring your kid to a food pantry, for what? Where are they going to put the food? Where are they going to cook it?
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's not just about getting food. It's about having a house to go to actually cook it, right? A safe place that you can live in every day.
Yeah. So when kids
that you can afford
on the weekend and say, I have no place to stay because I was kicked out of my house.
Mm-hmm. Where do you take them?
We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, we even looked into Father Bill's place in Attleboro. Mm-hmm. But that's for families. Brockton, there's one in Brockton. That's for families. So what do you do with a 17-year-old kid who has nowhere to go?
Yeah. And I know, like, in thinking of, like, just Child Protective Services, like DCF, right, that struggle, they're running out of homes for kids to go to. So when they're doing these emergency removals, they don't know where to go with these kids. So I think it's just a system as a whole has still a lot of holes in it that need to be, you know, looked at and implemented new practices to help individuals that are in need. I'm just really grateful that we have the Shannon Project in New Bedford. I'm grateful that we have the community behavioral health center and the mobile crisis that can work alongside with you guys, you know, in partner, not just with you, but New Bedford Police as well. So let me ask you this. I know that the Shannon Project is not the only thing that you are involved in. And I also know you're highly involved in the NAACP.
So, yes, I'm the president of the local NAACP of New Bedford. And we are working on, well, where my passion is, right, to help families, to help youth, and especially families of color, people of color. Like, we're working on mental health, we're working on health disparities and the stigma of mental health, as well as housing and other things that affect a stable home. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most important things is if we had foster homes, foster parents of different ethnic backgrounds. And we have a lot of surrounding communities, right? Not just New Bedford, that were able to take a teenager. I know a lot of people are not willing, especially a teenager of color, because they feel like they already have too many traumas. These kids just want to be loved. Right. They just want the attention. They just want somebody to say, you matter. Mm-hmm. And so if there are any families out there that are willing and able to foster some of these kids, we could take care of their needs, you know, their stability, their shelter, their food insecurities, as well as their mental health, because they can make sure that they are getting the support that they need now. So when they become adults, that they're able to function in society without so much anger, because trauma equals anger.
I know I've been fortunate enough to be able to come and talk to the NAACP, your chapter, in regards to mental health and mobile crisis and what we do. And I know you have a big event coming up on June 1st. So tell me a little bit about that.
So that is our annual Freedom Fund Breakfast. And this year we have Dr. Amina Pilgrim, who is a keynote speaker who has written a book, several books. One of them is Racism 101. And she talks about the stigmas of mental health and the health disparities for maternal, for women, especially women of color when it comes to maternal health care, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And as well as the housing crisis that we're facing. And alongside, I also am the president of the United Interfaith Action, which does the same thing. They're working on housing, education, and public safety right now. But housing is our biggest biggest crutch, because if, as you know, as the crisis center here, that when people don't have any place to live, it automatically does what? It affects their mental health.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's
housing stability is so important. And I know that because when we have individuals leaving us or that utilize our adult crisis stabilization unit and they're ready to go, and if they don't have a place to go to, it becomes an obstacle. Right. So our goal is to make sure that we're sending them to a home or to an apartment, to like some place that they feel like they have a place to go to versus back out onto the streets, because then it's a vicious cycle, right? You're homeless and you can't get to the pharmacy to pick up your prescription. Where are you going to put your meds if you have no place? Right, if you're living out in a tent, you know, people are getting robbed all the time in tents. There's so many different things. Well, so we try really, really hard to make sure that where they get from point A to point B so that they can stay stable.
Right.
But yeah, I'm excited for all the things that you guys are doing, especially through the Shannon Project and the NAACP. And I am very fortunate to have you as a friend and lucky to call you a friend, not just a colleague. And thank you. I appreciate you coming here and talking a little bit more. So is there a phone number that somebody should call if they're interested in somebody being part of the Shannon Project?
Yeah, they can call 508-742-6971. And that is our main number.
Perfect.
And somebody will be able to help them at that time.
Awesome. Thank you, Renee.
All right, thank you.